There are 14 courts of appeal. We don't have discretionary review. We have to consider all the appeals that are filed in our court, unlike the Texas Supreme Court and the Court of Criminal Appeals. We have jurisdiction over civil, criminal, and family appeals from our state and county district courts, and we are elected through partisan elections. This is completely unscientific, but in preparing for this presentation, I reached out to the chief justices of each court of appeals to try to get a sense for what percentage of their docket consists of employment cases. And as you can see from these numbers, they're pretty low. El Paso leads the pack with 15%, and courts of appeals in Tyler and Amarillo estimated that they have less than 1%. So if you take nothing else from this presentation, I hope you remember that we don't see a lot of these cases. And so I would ask that when you brief your cases, you err on the side of including more information rather than less. Because don't assume that we know anything. We see a lot fewer employment cases than our federal district courts and the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. For those of you who don't know, the 2000 elections changed the partisan makeup of the 1st, 3rd, 5th, and 14th courts of appeals. And these are just some articles that explain that. And these next few slides just demonstrate the change that took place on these courts of appeal. As you can see on the 1st Court of Appeals in Houston, we have a Democratic majority now. Same with the 14th Court of Appeals, 3rd Court of Appeals, Democratic majority. 4th Court of Appeals has been a Democratic majority. 5th Court of Appeals, same situation. We've got 8 Democrats on that court now. 6th and 7th are still ruby red. 8th Court of Appeals is Democratic like it once was, or once like it was before. 9th Court of Appeals in Beaumont is Republican. 10th, 11th, 12th as well. And 13th is Democratic majority like it's been for a while. So I'm going to cover the TCHRA, and then I'm going to switch to the Texas Whistleblower Act. Then I'll address the Bean Pilot cases, and then I'm going to finish up. With workers' comp retaliation cases. And again, my goal is just note some takeaways from each of these cases. Some of them I'm going to go through very quickly because I only have 30 minutes. But all of these cases are detailed in my paper. So if you have any additional questions about these cases, I would refer you to that. Smith versus Harris County is a first court of appeals case. Smith worked for Harris County Juvenile Probation Department as a probation officer. While he was employed, he filed 2 EEOC charges, and then he was passed over for a promotion, and he brought a retaliation claim. The trial court granted no evidence and traditional motions for summary judgment in favor of the county, and the Court of Appeals affirmed, finding that the county had put forth detailed information about why they selected the other employee over Smith, and Smith was not able to rebut this evidence. The takeaways from this case are pretty basic. Summary judgments are reviewed de novo, which I think all of you already knew. If a party brings both a no evidence MSJ and a traditional MSJ, and the trial court doesn't specify its basis for granting the summary judgment, we first review the no evidence MSJ. And if we find that the trial court did not err, then we don't address the traditional MSJ at all. This case surveys a lot of recent case law about temporal proximity. Cases that say gaps of 5 months, 2 years, 1 year, 4 months, and 8 months are not sufficient. This case wasn't even close. The gaps between the protected conduct and the adverse employment action here were 7 years and 3 years, and the court noted that wasn't nearly enough. The next case is more interesting, Apache Corp versus Davis. Catherine Davis was employed as a senior paralegal within Apache's legal department. She reported to attorney Dominique Ricotta, who is in charge of the legal department. She was hired in at age 52, and the other two paralegals in the department were younger than her. She got crosswise with Ricotta. The other two paralegals, one received a promotion and the other received a job title promotion, as well as a small increase in pay to account for additional responsibilities that she had with respect to e-discovery. Davis took issue with that and wasn't satisfied with the result. From there on out, she and Ricotta just didn't see eye to eye, and she reported that he retaliated against her in various ways. she eventually filed an internal complaint with Ricotta and with Bernal, who is Apache's employment lawyer, and with Apache's director of HR North America. In that complaint, she referenced a hostile work environment, age discrimination, woman discrimination, Title VII, and the Age Discrimination and Employment Act. She also asked that they imagine their reaction if their wife or daughter was subjected to similar offensive behavior. Bernal investigated and did not substantiate her complaints. When he briefed Ricotta on the results of his investigation, Ricotta asked Bernal what he thought he should do with Davis, and Bernal responded that he should fire her. After that, Ricotta launched an investigation into Davis and found a few attorneys didn't like working with Davis, and he ended up firing her. Davis sued for age discrimination and retaliation. The jury entered a judgment in her favor, and the trial court awarded fees. The Court of Appeals affirmed but suggested remitted her for a portion of the attorney's fees. The takeaways for this case this case is interesting because it's a jury verdict and we just don't have very many in the employment arena. So in this case, we see the court set forth the standards of review for reviewing a jury verdict. And for a legal sufficiency of the evidence challenge, we view the evidence in the light most favorable to the jury's finding, crediting favorable evidence if a reasonable fact finder could, and disregarding contrary evidence unless a reasonable fact finder could not.